אני אדבר באנגלית. יש מישהו שצריך תרגום מאנגלית לעברית? So if you don't hear me at the back, just let me know, okay? It's all right. So I just want to start by telling you what happens to me early every morning. I wake up at around 4 in the morning, and I really can't wait to the high point of my morning, which is around 5:30 or 6 o'clock, when I feed the chickens. And the reason is that when I go to the chickens with food, they are so excited and they are so enthusiastic and they are so full of life and kind of ready and talking and welcoming me and welcoming the food. I don't know whether it's me or whether they're interested in me or the food, but it doesn't matter. Each one is totally different. Each chicken has a character and a voice and a body language and a connection with all the other chickens. And I'm suddenly in a world, another society, a whole universe of beings relating to each other, each expressing its life, and it touches the heart. I'm just giving this a sense of the heart moment of relating to life. And all through the day, in a way, it's like that. There's thousands of olive trees near where I live in Clill. And each olive tree is a kind of expression. This one like this one like that. This one has got a face like this one has got a face like that. They've all got expressions of life. And there's nothing else except falling in love with all these expressions of life. What else are you going to do? There's nothing else to do except fall in love. Lietahed. And I see that with all of you right now. Actually, people ask me, where do I get the energy to keep teaching year after year, week after week? It's that. It's the energy of love, which I feel it right now. We can all feel that, and actually we all do feel that, but often we've forgotten. And what has happened so often is that this fundamental primal love that is always there like a stream in us gets kind of distorted, gets channeled by experience and conditioning, hatnaya. And then we feel, oh, I feel anxious. And my life, what is driving my life? Ma mania et chayim shali? Hitmodudut, coping, managing, struggling. I have to get money, I have to get a flat, I have to get friends, I have to be better, etc. All of these voices are gradually squeezing the heart. And it's just what happens. And the voices of basically survival, hisardut, and the voices of me, what I need in the world, they become louder and louder. And the voice of this pure love that we have as a child, that we have still in us, gets a little bit hidden. It goes into corners, we have to try and find it. But actually, we do have it. We are made of. I mean, maybe yesterday when I was talking about Buddha nature, it seemed very abstract to you as just a nice Buddhist kind of idealism. But it isn't like that. If you ask yourself, what am I really made of? what is my real basis? It cannot be all this stuff that we learnt on the way, the struggle of life. It's impossible that is what we're really made of. That's what we collected on the way. It's like, you know, on the way with this game and this game and this game and this game and this game, and now we feel, it's all on my shoulders, this hatnaya, this history, biography. But we are not that. So we're in between the two, the voices that are contracting our heart, mitkavetz, and the voice of our pure heart, life. So in the Dharma practice, we use mindfulness, awareness, vipassana, as a way of undoing all those klipot by seeing that they don't really stay. They're not made of solid stuff. We can look at the conditioning, hatnaya, the voices that contract us, and say, yeah, it's a voice, it's a story, like Aniha Kurban, or Shiputiyut, judgment, or story of struggle and difficulty that seems to be going around the mind. We can look at it fresh and say, wait a minute, it's not me. I'm not just that. It's stuck a bit, yes, it keeps going round, yes, but I'm not that. I'm more than that. And that's the awareness that we practice in meditation. I am bigger than my story. That's, we discover it not as a thought, but in real experience. I am bigger than my story. I am not just my stories, my problems, my issues, hitmodduyot, etc., etc., etc. That's not, I can see them, they pass by, therefore I am not them. And on the way, we learn qualities, and this is what I said yesterday, we learn qualities of being that come from the bigger place and not from the contracted small place. We learn qualities on the way with which we go into life. We learn through the vipassana practice, we learn how to allow our experience, we learn how to be more awake and attentive, erunut. We learn to be calm and to stop, and not just to be running all the time. We learn ethics, what it means to do wise action in this world that helps reduce suffering. We learn renunciation, that, okay, it's hot outside, but I'll manage. let go. We learn to be like the Buddha, to leave our comfort zone and not to be busy all our life trying to hold on to the comfort. We learn to be free in conditions, never mind what they are. This learning we bring into life. The heart and the mind are always together in all this process. The heart leads the mind. So we might be thinking, what am I going to do? What do I need? What do I have to get to? What are my matalot, my ambitions, my jobs, my work, my problems, my issues? But if you look, it's the heart that's driving that. The heart is saying,
chasar mashu.
I feel contracted. The heart says, I need. The heart says, fill me up. And then the mind says, oh, I need this and I need that, I need this, I need to go there and do that. So the heart is driving the mind. The mind is following, actually, with all the thoughts, what I need to do, what has to happen, who am I? But the needs and the voices of the heart are behind all the time, and they're really in every thought. There's no thought that doesn't have some heart in it. Heart, you can call in psychology language, affect. And it means the color. We're not a machine. So every thought has a color. It's like what we pay attention to. What says, this is what you need to look at right now. It's the heart that says that. This is interesting right now. This is important right now. That's the heart. And the mind follows. And so, the same thing I mentioned before, mind is also heart. So the heart can be contracted, can be busy with survival, can be busy with reactivity, tuguvatiyut, can be anxious, can be stressed, can be sad and struggling and miserable. Or the heart can be expanded and connected and full of love. And usually the two are mixed. Expanded heart and contracted heart, this is the way we go through our day. We're human beings in samsara, so we have both. We need to practice with the heart and the mind, because the heart is driving the mind and the mind is influencing the heart. So they're both part of the practice. And as I said yesterday, in vipassana practice, in our mindfulness practice, the heart is always there, but it's not necessarily so clear and as heart practice. But it's inbuilt. For example, non-struggle, calmness, allowing things to be what they are. This is essentially part of vipassana practice. I remember going to Professor Mark Williams in Oxford, who developed mindfulness-based cognitive therapy, which is therapy based on mindfulness. And I talked to him about compassion. He said, the whole thing doesn't work without compassion. Mindfulness doesn't work without heart. It has to be there in it. It's essential inside the practice. And indeed, every spiritual tradition will value, will, as it says in, I forget, maybe it's a Buddhist phrase, if it's not heartful, it's not wise. If it's not heartful, it's not wise. Think of the holiest book. Probably the holiest book in the whole of the Tanakh is Shir HaShirim, the book of love. And for thousands of years, this has been regarded as the most holy book, the highest book in the Tanakh. So like the mind, what we do with the mind, which is meeting the conditioning, letting it go, letting it pass by, seeing that all the things that give us contraction are actually not ours. They come and they go. We can do the same with the heart. And so very often we meet negativity of the heart, and we may already be meeting it. And sometimes it's enough for someone here on the Brahma to say the word love, and we just go straight into anger, negativity, reaction, despair. I don't know. The heart is uncontrollable. We can't control the heart. But what we can do is the same way. We purify the heart in the same way that we do purifying the mind, in exactly the same way by allowing the heart to speak. We are not censor. There's no censorship of the heart. We're not allowed to feel bad. Did anyone say that to you? In the name of peace and light and love and pinkness. Pouring, all we need to do is pour balsam in the chara. That's vipassana. It's not vipassana. It's not what we do here. So we allow what is coming up to come up and see it as painful story that we gathered on the way, the pains and the scars, tzalakot, of our journey. We allow them, but we also see them as painful and let them go, and at the same time be aware of this primal, deep heart energy of love, which is what the basis of our life. So we work on two levels, to encourage the basis, the love power in us, and to know the stories, the pains, the difficult emotions, and to see them and to let them go, to be aware of them and to meet them and to let them go. So we purify the stream of the heart just like we purify the stream of consciousness. Hazerem ha-toda'a. Hazerem ha-lev ha-zerem ha-toda'a metaherim shneim. The word metta in Pali, mutra in Sanskrit, is love, friendliness, kindness, or translated into English as loving kindness. Not a very good translation, but there isn't a good translation. And in the tradition, the whole of the love world has four colors, which are called the Brahma Viharas, the four Brahma Viharas. And Brahma is the ancient word for the God world, the ultimate world. And Vihara is like palace, temple, or house, or mansion, or like a king's castle, king's palace. And so it's the four Brahma Viharas are metta, which is love or loving kindness, karuna, which is compassion, mudita, which is joy, joyfulness with the joy of life, and upekka, which is equanimity or steadiness. They're called Brahma Viharas because they're really beyond the ordinary human house. They're in the heavenly house. Because they're called immeasurable. You can't measure them. They're not inside human left brain that wants to control and measure control. They're not controllable. They are beyond the control world of mind, of thought, that wants to do and to survive and to need. They're somewhere else. I think you can just call them, also a word from the tradition, that very simply kind eyes, looking, a way of looking at the world with kindness. And they're very, very basic. It's about empathy that we already know, that we have. It's about getting up and being in love with the chickens in the morning. It's about natural goodness that we all have. It's about our natural ability to be a mother and a father. I remember how powerful it was when we practiced matter in peace work, that for many, many years we did many different kinds of work with Israelis and Palestinians, and sometimes Israelis and Israelis, in situations of conflict and potentially of violence. And one of the main tools we use, especially in peace walks that we did throughout Israel and sometimes Palestine, was metta. So we were just walking slowly through towns and villages and kibbutzim and moshavim and Jerusalem and Tel Aviv and fields next to the cows and every, as we walked, giving metta, friendliness to the cows, friendliness to the dog passing by, friendliness to the people that shouted at us, friendliness to each other, friendliness to the policemen that were accompanying us so often. I'm not sure whether they were for us or against us, but they were with us anyway. So friendliness to the police, and friendliness to the soldiers, and friendliness to the... I mean, on and on and on, just constant 24-hour friendliness. And it made a dramatic difference. Their atmosphere was totally different. The Jews and the Arabs who were walking together were just in another world of quiet friendliness. And it just changes the world. And I remember it's so strong how the world feels so different with metta. So we practice... practicing metta, what we already started here in the retreat, by some very simple suggestions that came from Simi, myself, and Toma. Just appreciation, for example, aracha. A sense of okayness, a sense of no struggle. That's already the beginning. That's an invitation to something which we already know, and reminding us we can be there instead of the difficulties and the struggle and the fears. Yes, we can be there. And it's interesting that one of the texts that is inviting us to see how natural it is a text that's where the Buddha asks, who is it that you really love more than anybody else? And of course the answer is yourself, me, myself. And the word here, the word used in translation would be cherish. And I checked with Simi, and she said the word would be lehokir, with a kuf. And I mean, we need words like this. Who do we cherish? We cherish ourselves, because we spend our whole life looking after ourselves, and then we forget that it's love. It's love. We love ourselves, honestly. It's not narcissism. Narcissism is different. Narcissism is what Trump does when he needs everybody to put him up there. That's narcissism. But this is not narcissism. This is basic love that we have for ourselves. It's a beautiful thing. We look after ourselves. We eat. We sleep. We pay attention to our health, our whole life, we are looking after ourselves. We can see that we are a mother and we are our child. And it's something loving. Just can look at it like that. And so if there's thoughts of judgment or pain, we can still be friendly and say, yes, but I cherish myself. I'm looking after myself. There's pains in the back, yes, but I'm with myself. There is judgmental thoughts, I'm no good, this is no good, yes, but I'm cherishing myself. can be bored, fed up, it's too hot, too cold, too this, too that. Yes, but I cherish myself. It's there, whatever our experience, it can be there as a constant, pure stream of the heart that says, yes, but I'm loving. Love is there. So sometimes we do need to develop our love by overcoming resistance. So the heart, as I say, is uncontrollable. So we may feel anything, anger, irritation, boredom, resistance. We can be fed up, tired, want to run away, want to escape, all of that, everything is there. But we can feel that the love is conditioned, and that's very, very, very much the way love is in our daily life. I love my partner, providing they don't shout at me too much. Or I love my child, but when they're a teenager and they start fighting back and doing crazy things, I love somebody, but I want love back. If they're not giving me love back, then my love goes. This is conditional love. It's those places where we see the limits of our love, which we can see right now here in our practice. The limit, the way, I can appreciate, but not now. My back is hurting and it's too hot, to all this appreciation. Forget appreciation, it's much too hot and problematic right now. So there is our limit. So we meet, our limit is part of the way in which we expand the boundaries of the heart. When we acknowledge limit, just like when we in Vipassana acknowledging difficult experiences like judgmental thought, we meet that limit and we move it. Yes, it's a judgmental thought, but it just dissolves away, and again dissolves away, and again it goes. So that moves the limit. And the same with the heart. The heart can react and feel bad and feel this and feel that, but we're all the time moving the limit. We're expanding the heart. We're touching the difficulty and moving on. Like walking, actually. We can't walk without resistance. Otherwise it'd be like Achla Kerach, trying to walk on ice. We need resistance from the earth, otherwise we can't move. So love expands with resistance, meets resistance, and moves on. And I must say that if we look more carefully at all those so-called obstacles to love, המכשולים לאהבה, they're in a way also גם הם אהבה. Maybe not easy to see, but our fears, for example, are ways in which we respond to life in the best way that we know in order to help our life. The best way that we know to preserve our life and to look after ourselves at this minute is to be afraid. So you can say, well, there's nothing good about fear. The basis of fear is still this cherishing our life. Lehukir et hachayim, to look after ourselves, is still happening. And it goes into fear. Okay, we don't like the fear, it's a problem, but it's still based somewhere on love. Underneath all emotions boil down to love. All emotions, all heart is underneath made of love. The practice that we're going to practice in this retreat will be reflecting the history of the practice in the Theravada world, and it will be two or three things. Firstly, we will be practicing a bit like we have done so far, which is a simple reminder of the pure nature of our being. The simple reminders when we're walking outside like we did this morning, to be belonging, to remember that we're belonging to the earth and the trees. We feel they're connected, joining with the world. That's already metta. This connectedness is our is basic love. So we'll be doing that. We'll also be using, I guess from tomorrow, we're going to start using phrases, which is part of the traditional practice, when we use language to remind the heart of metta, of kindness, and of love. So there are ways of reminding, of triggering the heart. And we're going to be using just basic presence, a very ancient practice. When you look at the most ancient books of texts, of suttas, like the Sutta Nipata, there metta is practiced as a vibration, as a tether, come on, tether universali. So it's also a way, because the heart isn't a language of words and concepts. It's much more, the heart is much more tether, much more a vibration. That's what the heart is. You can't control the heart because it's a vibration. It's not a language. And we need to be very friendly to the uncontrollable heart. Not to expect, just because we do a practice here today, that we're going to be in bliss. The heart does its own thing. We can offer reminders to the heart, we can trigger the heart, but we can't control the heart. And there's a nice Greek legend of Eros and Psyche. And the legend says that Eros, now Eros is male, and the power of life, it's the power of life beyond thought or language or concept. Eros is a fundamental life energy. And Eros and Psyche had a relationship. Psyche, the female goddess, Greek goddess, Eros, the Greek god. They had a relationship. But Eros said to Psyche, "We'll have a relationship. We'll meet every night and we'll make love, but you must never turn on the light to look at me." And Psyche got more and more curious and more restless and couldn't hold on to this anymore. And one night she turned on the light to look at Eros, and Eros vanished. And Psyche began a search for Eros. Psyche being the mind, Eros being the heart. Psyche, she began a search for Eros. All over, non-stop, desperate search for love, for Eros. And she went, she heard, she had to go down into the underworld, which you can look at, you know, if you want, in the unconscious world. And eventually she found that the one place she could actually meet Eros again is the top of the mountain. So right at the peak place, if you like, the peak experience, then Eros and Psyche, the mind and the heart, are joined again, are in union again. The heart is like the wind. We can't control it. The heart is the wind. But if we are open If we stay open and present, allowing, friendly to what happens, our heart is gradually, if we listen to our heart more and more, it opens. And the Dharma is really about this. And I want to finish with this lovely phrase from Zen that says, what is the Dharma? What is Dharma practice? It's not the reading of texts and the chanting of books and the studying of old wisdom and the priests and the teachers and so on. The real Dharma is the love letters that we receive from the sun and the wind and the moon and the snow. So I'd like to invite you just to kind of receive the love letters, Mikhtavei Ahava, from the trees and from the body and from the mind and from the earth and from our feet that is walking and from the love of the staff that are cooking for us and the rice that was grown far away and that we are given as a gift and the breath that we breathe, and regard all of those as love letters. And that's, in this uncontrollable heart, the way we purify our heart life. Thank you. So we'll take a few moments quiet.